Well, welcome. Thanks for coming. This is a world premiere event, which means that I just made it up. In fact, I made up most of it this morning. But this is how a forager operates. So I suppose you all got the idea this is about wild food. And this will be, in part, depending on what you ask for, but it's mainly going to be what I woke up thinking is probably the most important things I could talk about today and what I've learned in 20 or so years of being a forager. So it may be a little more general than that, and if you have specific questions, I'll answer those. But I'm not sure what will happen, and part of being open to that is what foraging is all about. Yeah. So tell me, what does bring you here? Like, what do you want to know about? Or hear about, or see, smell, anything. I'm going to write it down here, so you hold me to it. All right. You have consensus? Does anyone object to any of this? So consensus is part of hunter-gatherer culture, so that's what we're learning. In the bigger picture, foraging is part of that. And one of the reasons I did sell to restaurants is I didn't have a job when I got here 20 years ago, and I didn't want a job, and I've never had a job, and I'm self-employed. So being independent is part of being a hunter-gatherer, except that you don't do it alone, you do it with other people. And to stay independent, you don't force anyone else to do things, so you all agree to do it together. There's no chiefs, actually, in that culture. So if what that means is I'll do today what we'll all agree on what happens today. So, yes, I'll address all of that. And if you'll humor me, you might do a little bit of what I planned, which would be new for me. Because like I said, I've been doing this for about 20 years. So I have what you could call a tour company or an educational organization, depending on how altruistic it sounds to you. We take out local people, we take out tourists, for the most part, right now. And we take them out to eat, which means outside. And that's something that 21 years ago I got here and just did in order to survive. So yeah, I'll talk about survival. But eventually, I wanted to make some money, and I started to sell to restaurants and to teach. Now I have 7 guides. We do over 100 tours a year for over 1,000 people every year. And we start our training, if you're interested, in April for guides. So that'll be our second round. And we also teach in public schools in Asheville and elsewhere by request. So that's the sort of the organization part. And really all of it is by donation. So that's part of the sharing that we think is in our mission. So why did I start, and you know, why do I do it now? You know, health benefits, I think I had an idea of. I was in college and I was eating Burger King, you know, like that's what I grew up with. Okay. And the first thing I realized is there's such a thing as health food, and then such a thing as natural food. And I also went hiking for the first time. And I'd never been in the woods, and I'll never forget when I saw somebody pick a blueberry off a bush. And I was like, oh my God. I remember when I first moved to Asheville, I saw that coming. If you felt a little shock at that, that will give you a little intro into this story. I was helping someone move, and I picked an apple off the ground to eat it. He's like, what are you doing? It's like, it's an apple. He's like, that touched the ground. So at that point, this was 20 years, 5 years after graduating, that I had already gotten, you know, a lot more natural. I wanted to get back to nature in a lot of ways, and part of it was to join a commune. I actually was traveling around for those 5 years, wanting to join one, and you know, sort of get out of the system that way and not have the job and make money. And I gave up on it and joined a couple friends here. And the health benefits I realize are, you know, greater than organic food. So at that point, I understood organic stuff, and you know, I was growing organic stuff in the garden. And even if you grow organic yourself, which is organic that you can actually trust, that what the label means, that your food is going to be anywhere from let me turn it around. Do you know how much more healthier, you know, on average, wild food is than cultivated food?
87%.
Any other guesses?
That's.
How would you come up with
87%? I don't know.
I was going to say 300%. Uh-huh. 300%.
Yeah, you know, I was at this like nut festival they had here, and it wasn't necessarily wild nuts, but they had a bunch of nuts in a container. You had to guess how many nuts there were, and you win a prize. And I guess I haven't won because they didn't call me. But I chose an odd number, like 87, too. I was like, okay, I think it's 1,200, but I'm going to say 1,203 in case someone else says 1,200. And so the answer is roughly 87%. Because typically what I say is that wild foods are 10 to 100 times more. But what I'm thinking of is, and the figures that I've seen were vegetables and fruits.
Okay, I'm just curious.
And it's interesting you raise the point about meats, because that is up for me right now. That it's venison season, right? People are hunting deer. And we all know the benefit of organic is not just what's in it, but what's not in it, right? So you want to avoid things like GMOs and stuff. But the problem is, you get wild venison, you're not necessarily avoiding GMOs. Yeah, and when I realized that, I was so horrified. It was one of the sickest feelings I had. You know, like I can't even get truly wild food, and that wild food could be less organic than you know, farm raised animals and produce. You know, I had my hair tested by another before you know integrative was around. I went to another integrative clinic, and I was very high in cadmium, which is a heavy metal. And cadmium is taken up really readily by not just plants, but mushrooms in particular. So heavy metals, mushrooms are used in order to clean up the environment. You plant the mushroom, they suck up all the heavy metals. Then you pick the mushrooms and you go dump them, you know, in Iraq or somewhere else. So. But my point is, you know, we can't really escape pollution. There's still benefit to wild food, of course, and that benefit is huge. So the nutritional benefit is overlapping with the medicinal benefit. You know, when something is that healthy, it's going to help you cure things. Okay? So the medicine I do is preventative. And if you ask me, well, what's this for? What's that for? What should I use for this or that? Like, I don't catalog all that, because if you eat healthy, hopefully those diseases won't come to you. In fact, those diseases, I want to write down this phrase. Do you know what cancer, heart disease, what are the other top 10 things that people die of? Okay, so that's up there, you know, with sort of, I put it together with heart disease. What else?
Diabetes.
Uh-huh. Diabetes. I can't keep up with writing all these down, but you've heard of all of them before. Huh? That's right. It's called iatrogenic causes. The third leading cause of death in the United States is doctors and medicine. But that's going to fit with the general heading that I'm about to tell you. But do you know what all these diseases are called? All right. This is what I'm going to write down. This is the 50-cent phrase. Diseases of... You should play Hangman with this. Starts with a C. No, it's civilization. It's actually civilizati. It's Italian for civilization. So, and industrialization is just the most recent acceleration of something that's 5,000 years old. So in my book, organic food is unnatural food. It's artificial food. It's just a degree below GMOs, because all of those things are human created. So when we talk about local food and eating local, to me, going in eating something that a farmer grew locally, that's not our local food. Why isn't that local food to me? You're nodding, but
it can be grown anywhere. I mean, a tomato can be grown here, it can be grown in California, it can be grown in Alaska under the correct conditions.
But if it's grown here, why isn't it local? What if the seed is local?
Is it deliberately planted as opposed to naturally occurring?
Yeah, well, that makes it cultivated, but that doesn't mean it isn't local. So what? Why?
It's not native to here.
Okay, you're getting closer. Yeah. Now, I don't just eat native things, okay? Huh?
I said it's not indigenous to the area.
Yeah, an indigenous and native are, let's say they're what's the word?
Synonymous.
So you're closer, but that's not the issue. Okay? If I go to the rainforest and I cut down, 2 square miles and I put in a golf course, and then I advertise the golf course and to the people around there, I say, come, use this local golf course. Is that sustainable? Yeah. Agriculture is inherently not sustainable. Okay, so that tomato that you can grow anywhere, you can't grow anywhere by just throwing the seeds down. What happens if you just throw seeds in your garden and you come back 3 months later?
Bugs.
Yeah. So that garden needs your help. It needs a life support system because it doesn't belong there. It's not natural. That golf course will disappear too really quickly. So all of our agriculture needs us to use what they call inputs, whether they're industrial or whether they're organic. It doesn't matter. You're fighting against nature. Okay? I'm not telling you not to grow anything, because there is a cross between agriculture and foraging. That is what I do recommend. Does anyone know what that would be called? Here we go again. All right, I'm not going to get caught off the edge again. Yes, come on. This is like, what's that? All right, great. So permaculture is growing what is not necessarily native but naturalized here. You're going with nature, okay? So instead of weeding the dandelions out of your lettuce, we'll let the dandelions grow and we'll eat those. Let's plant dandelions because they grow themselves. So that's one of them. Gotocola, unfortunately, is not one of them. I never heard that gotocola will grow wild here. Has anyone heard that? No, I don't think so. I think I would have heard of it if it is. You'd be surprised at some of the things that do grow wild here. There's the woman who's growing wasabi here, which is the horseradish. A lot of the things that grow in Japan and that area of China will grow here, like ginseng. That's why once they wiped out ginseng there, they started getting it from here. And this was hundreds of years ago, so ginseng has been harvested for hundreds of years, and now there's very little left. So it's native here. But again, it doesn't matter to me whether something is native, but whether it's naturalized. That's the question. Does it grow itself? And so, the health benefits of something that grows itself to you as a person, and not just to the ecology, are going to be greater. Do you know why that is?
I'm just aware that if something chooses the place and the time and everything that plant chooses,
yeah,
then it grows so much healthier and bigger and stronger. It's just very obvious. So I guess it's got everything it needs. But when we dig a hole and put it there, or however we get it there, then it's up to us to guess what it needs.
Would you all agree?
Did you say the health benefits are greater? Is that what you prefaced?
Yeah, I'm asking why. Why is it that something that's naturalized, meaning wild, is going to be healthier for you?
Yeah,
And this is one of the reasons. But also, that's half true. The opposite half is also true. It chooses to be here, and it's able to survive, but it's not able to survive in some ways as easily as the stuff we grow. So the stuff we grow, yeah, we dump, you know, fertilizers and stuff. We make its life easy. We might have it like in a greenhouse. We might protect it. So, you know, a healthier person, you ever try to grow kids, you know, and keep them protected from, like, germs, they don't grow up healthy. You know, you have to be exposed to things. So there's a principle called, and I don't even think anyone's going to guess this word, but we'll see if anyone knows it by the time I'm done. Yep, that's right. Yeah, it's like an adaptogen helps you deal with stress. And stress is what is actually good for you, to some extent. So the plants in the wild are stressed. I like to say, you know, if I was a cannibal, like, who do you think would be healthy for me to eat? Tarzan or an accountant? Any accountants? I hope you're not. Like, you know, you just sit at the computer all day, which pretty much now, this time of year I do. Like, you know, it's going to be as healthy as being out there exercising, you know, eating what's natural. So what's true for plants is true for animals, including us. So this is why, what do you see today? Like, what do we try to eat? What kind of beef? What kind of meats, I mean? Grass-fed? Yeah, that's what they naturally eat. It's the same with you know, birds. So your eggs, you know, are not going to be that healthy if they're not out free range. That's another word for it. Eating bugs, too. You can see it in the yolk. The same goes, if you understand it correctly, with being gluten-free, okay? It's not good for cows to eat grains. It's not good for us to eat grains either, right? Therefore, to have a low-carb diet is the same thing, because the carbs we're eating are pretty much, you know, wheat. And I'm going to show you a visual aid here. This was sent to me this week by my chef cookbook author friend in New York. I don't know what possessed her to send me these things. Catch. Don't eat it if you know what's good for you. I mean, I'm the last person in the world to eat this. You know, this is like a triple punch of like the worst things you could eat. Right, what is in there?
Soy.
Well, it says contains milk, soy, coconut, and almonds, so that's the allergen warning, obviously.
Oh, I thought it had, oh, so it doesn't have any grains. Okay, give me one.
Well, what about the soy, though? That's not so good.
Yeah, so soy is pretty much up there with grains. Anyway, if you, huh?
It's just to drink 16 ounces of water.
Yeah, did you read where it said that? It says if you're experiencing like stomach distress from eating this bar, drink a big glass of water. So it's amazing. I think it's too, because it's too concentrated. You know, we have mice at home, and I told my girlfriend, let's put that out, and it'll probably kill the mice. Yeah.
Typically go and eat, drink a bunch of water, and that's what causes the expand and they
end up taking surgery. Yeah, do you hear that? I give up. I'm putting my jacket on. I am freezing. So, so I get for not, huh? Well, you can open one, but I need these for visual aids for my next classes. I opened one, just trust me, like I had four. So, you know, It looks like a raw cookie dough. That's all it is, you know? I mean, you don't put soy, I guess, in most cookies, but that's what it looked like. Like nougat or something. You know, a lot of us, like, we look at ingredient stuff when we go and shop and we're really, like, concerned about that, and then we turn around and go out to eat. You know, this is the stuff you're getting in the restaurant, by the way. It's just not in your face. So if you want to be healthy, you have to stop going out to eat. At least not very often. And I know that's hard. Be hard for some of you.
It's really hard in this town.
Especially here, yeah. I mean, I remember I was doing this National Geographic thing at Night Bell, and it was in front of, like, Katie Putnam. The guy's like, what restaurants do you like? And I was like, well, I'm going to go out to eat because it's bad for you. And I mean, I do, of course. You know, it's not everything. But there's an alternative to going out to eat and enjoying amazing food, and it's sitting back there. This is not, will you wave, please? So Antanas, he's a personal chef, caterer, and he has brought some samples of wondrous things he does with wild foods. And he's going to share those if you stick around long enough. Where was I? Oh, yeah, we were doing this. Is this going okay? Are you getting what you wanted yet? All right.
Hormesis is basically like sustainability. It's another word for like a stasis of it's natural. It doesn't need to be sustained or supported to survive.
Well, okay. Okay, but this is a principle that a little stress is healthy.
Oh, that's
good. That's what that means. Okay. Yeah.
Years ago, and it probably still is true, but they fruit farmers would take a hit and beat on their fruit trees to stress them so they'd bear more fruit.
Yeah, well.
And, is that, I mean, something you've heard?
Yes, I mean, no.
I've heard that multiple times, and I'm like, it makes so much sense.
These were nice people.
They have to rise up to adapt to that stress, and they get stronger, and they produce more.
Yeah, I have not heard that for fruit, but that is precisely what you do for fruiting mushrooms. It's one of the ways to get it to fruit. It's called forcing, and you take like a baseball bat or something, and you just start wailing on this log, and the mushrooms will fruit. Yes. Yeah, somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually from there.
Oh, wow. Did you know this thing, this about hitting the...
No, it was actually a really concept. It was intense when I moved there. The realtors don't really mention the mushroom plant with the world as a selling point because of the smell. But it's crazy because I work at the Inom Biltmore Estate, and we actually get mushroom plants from this plant. And it brings a great amount of wealth to the town.
Yeah, yeah. The interesting thing about that is, you know, so Kenneth Swear is the capital of cultivated mushrooms, and these mushrooms aren't cultivated on logs, so they don't have to beat them, okay? They're grown in, well, there's an expression, you know, this one where it says, they treat me like a mushroom at work? They feed me crap and keep me in the dark.
So,
yeah, so... That's basically it, and it's fairly easy, and 99% of the mushrooms they grow are one species, Agaricus bisporus. This is very easy to grow, you know, on this stuff. You don't need logs, because sawdust is a lot easier to grow stuff on, or cow manure, compost type things. What a relief. You did that?
You had one here
conditioning. Oh, yay. So the stress and the banging on the thing, it's true that, you know, plants when stressed will flower, you know, so you often cut them back and then they'll be more likely to flower. Or actually, fruit trees will flower. A grapevine you need to cut back, for example, every year to have it fruit the following year. Of course, there's a limit to that. You could, you know, stress something too much, you're actually hurting it. It's just like doing exercise. You lift weights or something, it's good. You develop muscle. You lift too heavy of a weight, you hurt yourself. So the same thing is true. You're exercising yourself. And the exercise has to include, you know, what I recommend is that there's a difference between foraging and wild food. You see that? You can buy wild food in a store. Someone else foraged it for you, but the real health comes from doing it yourself. So, for a lot of reasons. And, and the medicinal benefits, again, they overlap with that. And I have someone I just heard from got cancer in Saluda. And I was just writing her family this morning. And, you know, offered her some wild mushrooms, which are known, you know, for cancer prevention and reversal. But there's a limit to how much you could do at that point. And a lot of, again, health is in prevention, is in a lifestyle where your nature can do an awful lot, even if you never put something in your mouth, just from being there. So how would you get started? What do you do when you want to learn more about something? He's smiling because he knows.
Ask questions.
Uh-huh. Google it, ask questions.
Learn from somebody who knows.
Yes, you hear all these answers are falling into two categories. Okay, and you may not realize that, but because we're raised to do things a certain way. We go to public school or private school, but we go to institution and we learn to look things up and maybe buy a book. And of course you have a teacher, but once you leave school, you're used to, you Google it. It's the answer most people tell me, which is like, the new replacement for a book, or you get an app or something. So that's one whole category. But some of you said you ask or you find someone to learn from. That's the other category. It's the one I recommend. Not because I want your money, but that's the traditional way and the easy way. It's the only smart way to do it. So we think someone who's smart gets A's in school because they know how to look in a book and then like answer questions. But if you ask the person next to you, like for the answer, what's that called? Yeah, you get an F. Okay, I'm telling you all, a smart person cheats. Okay, a smart person doesn't get A's in school. Okay, that's not like an intelligent way to go through life. It's to get help from someone else. Okay, so if you ask me how do I get started, what books do you recommend? The answer is none. I do have a book. I don't have it here, but you get it if you take one of these tours with me. But it's not designed to be something you learn from on your own. It's worse than like it'd be more dangerous to try to learn from a book. It's not only not helpful, but it's dangerous. So this is a skill, and the skill takes practice. And you could have guidance in that, but those are the two things that you need, just like any skill. Does that make sense? Yeah. And you can, since you live here, you can take courses with us. We have like a, what's it called, season pass. You can come as much as you want, and you can get one of those. And again, it's whatever you can afford. And we don't advertise that a lot because most of our people are tourists and they have plenty of money. And that's what pays for our school program. So,
How much is a season's pass?
Well, we actually have, I think, three or four. Like, you can buy sort of a pack of four visits or six or eight. And to come, like, as much as you want the whole season, I think it's the price of $500. And we, like I said, we do over 100 things a season. So they really, if you're really going to come a lot, it's actually a good buy. I know it sounds like a lot of money, but we had a couple people do it this year. One of them has now signed up to teach for us. He was so like enthralled with it. Yeah.
Were you fortunate to know people along your 20 years that taught you, or did you read some books?
Yeah, I did it the dumb way. I went to Princeton. I'm supposed to be a smart person, but all I did was learn how to jump through hoops. And the hoops in this case were like looking in books. So all I did was I banged my head against the wall with a stack of books this high to figure out what was in front of me. Okay, now that takes literally 2 to 4 hours per, it was mushrooms mostly. You know how long it takes to ask somebody and have an answer? Like 2 to 4 seconds, if they're right by you. And if not, like how do you ask, what if you don't know anybody who's an expert, what do you do? Okay, so that's it. You're asking somebody, maybe who's far away, but at least you're asking somebody. So that's a smart way to do it. It's not the best because the picture you take could be of one of 100 mushrooms that were in a patch, and maybe that person says, oh yeah, that's edible. And what happens if one of the mushrooms that you didn't take show the picture of is not? So you need practice and guidance, ideally in person. Okay. I'm on the North Carolina, well, see, nobody's left, so you must trust me already, but I didn't tell you about like, all my credentials, but I'm on the state licensing board for wild mushroom commercial safety, and we're establishing, okay, what are we going to do to regulate this industry, which until now is illegal? So someone, you asked about restaurants. I sold to restaurants for 20 years illegally, and now they ask me to be on the board, and I'm in charge of, like, you know, making it legal. And what did I tell them? I said, people need practice. And they're like, can we, you know, require a weekend course? I'm like, we can't learn it in a weekend, okay? And so we're going back and forth on how to do this. Something which is challenging to us, but is simple any other country in the world, because you would grow up learning this from your parents. So can you, I mean, you might ask me, and no one's asked me yet, you know, you had some specific questions, you know, how do you tell maybe this from this, or you did, because you're from Santa Cruz, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to ask that later.
Yeah, so that, she's going to ask.
I'm getting some bad ones.
Yeah, so like, she might know enough, you know, they say a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So if you come from somewhere else, especially, you think, oh, I recognize that one, well, a lot of people die that way, because it's not the same as, it looks kind of like what they know. So, look at that, I lost my train of thought, but, oh yeah, how do you know the difference between these poisonous lookalikes, right? And I say to people, well, how do you know the difference between cabbage and iceberg lettuce? Can everyone tell the difference? Mm-hmm. Right, okay, did anyone go to school to learn that? Or you went to cooking? Okay, yeah, every group has one, like, you know, culinary school. All right, so did anyone learn that from a book? It just happened, you see? And so anywhere else in the world, you grow up with these things, and you learn them just like you can tell vegetables apart, you could tell wild ones apart. It's not that hard, okay? And it's not that dangerous. But you probably know that, or else you wouldn't have come. You know, it's my mom who always thinks it's horrifyingly dangerous, and she thought I was going to kill myself. Until I got on TV, and then she realized, wow, like, you know, I have one of my guides, he offered somebody a mushroom, I don't have the picture handy, called chicken of the woods. And she's like, I'm not eating that, are you crazy? Like the apple that touched the ground. And then she went shopping, like, the next day, and at Whole Foods, they had chicken of the woods for sale. It was like $40 a pound. She went home, she called him, and said, can I have some of that chicken of the woods? You know? So this is the box, you know, that we think in, and that we eat in, and we live in, like this box. So I think I answered how to start, especially in Asheville. Right, what was that specifically about? Anyone? I'm not sure if I answered that yet. But yeah, if it's about getting started, then I can tell you, you know, of course you can do it with my organization. There's a mushroom club you can join for $21 a year. You can go out with them as much as you want after that for free. You know, they may start doing classes, but they don't teach you specifically like we do. You just go out as a group. It's like a meetup group. And I told you about Gotu-Kola. So you want to add anything to this?
I'm just curious. You mentioned heavy metals in mushrooms.
Yeah.
The increase of heavy metals in our environment, are mushrooms picking up more? Is that a purpose, and could it be dangerous if you eat too many of them?
I wish I knew. I mean, I have, there was a fellow in Berkeley who tested on plants and had really promising findings, and he wasn't testing mushrooms, but mushrooms are known specifically to be bioaccumulators. All of Bent Creek, which is the most, you know, popular mushroom area since close to town, is in the shadow of the Skyland coal plant, which was cleaned up a few years ago, but used to dump plenty of mercury smoke into the air, bang down on the number one mushroom hunting spot. And I've encouraged places to do testing, and no one's ever come through and finally, you know, done it. But it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the mushrooms there were high in heavy metals. It's like the venison I was talking about earlier. It's sad, you know, a lot of us, you know, you're here, you try to eat healthy, and it's something you, there's a limit to how much you can do as an individual. I mean, we're all screwed, basically.
So, one question, like, a lot of people, we all educated people, don't pick the mushroom close to the road.
Yeah.
But, example, like, people grow the vegetable, like, example, white ash field close to the road, like, tomato, maybe some grow this, and then the mushroom grow close to the tomato, it's good mushroom, but why the fear of flight between, don't eat that, the example, chicken and wood grow close to your garden, and you wouldn't eat because of that that mushroom grow in close to the road, but your garden close, feet away from that, but you eat your vegetable. So do you have any input that we supposed to pick that mushroom that grow close to our garden, or we just leave them alone and just eat our vegetable close to the road? So you have any input in that?
Okay, so let's say, I think your question is, like, why do we avoid mushrooms close to the road, but we'll eat vegetables growing close to the road?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, I wouldn't eat either one. But mushrooms are, like I said, it depends which one. Chicken of the woods is growing on a tree, so the tree, to some extent, it could be filtering the stuff. It might be cleaner than the vegetables. I might eat the chicken of the woods and not the vegetables going by the road. Also, things, if they're close enough to the road, the stuff in the air falls on the leaf. And you could wash that off, theoretically. But there's also, you know, the systemic toxins, you know. Like, they say, like, well, Roundup, you know, you could, it's on the leaf, you could wash it off. But not if it's, like, taken in, it's in the inside it. So I'm not an expert on these things, you know, unfortunately. But I'm careful either if it's growing by the road, whether it's planted or wild. Even if it's a plant, I'm careful. Like right now, I just harvested amaranth seed. Amaranth is a pretty amazing plant. It is a super weed. It's resistant to Roundup. So you could eat an amaranth plant that looks great, but it's full of Roundup because it won't kill it. The other thing it concentrates is nitrates. So a lot of like fertilizer will get sucked up. So you don't even have to be near the road, but if they're fertilizing the field, you can get dangerous amounts in your plant. This study in Berkeley that I mentioned, it tested plants in urban areas close to roads, and the only thing that the plants were taking up in dangerous amounts was cadmium. And I'm not sure if it was only watercress, but I think that's the main thing, the reason you can't eat watercress wild virtually anywhere. Now, I have watercress in my neighbor's yard, like, gorgeous. And I remember I gathered it twice, and then one time I went back in the winter, it was cold, and the water was steaming. Okay, and the water was upstream of the watercress. And I was like, why is steam coming out of the water? And I went and I noticed there was a drain pipe coming from a neighbor's house. All the gray water was going into the stream when I was picking this watercress. So
you don't recommend eating watercress because it has a high level of cadmium?
Yeah, it's very, very high bioaccumulator of cadmium. Now, I forget which plants were tested by this Berkeley study, and I need to write the guy because it's very recent. But I think out of a lot of heavy metals, like lead and mercury and stuff, that was one. But one's bad enough, I mean.
Can't you just plant the watercress in a big pot outside and then it's not taking?
Yeah, if that can work. It might need a lot of clean water flow.
Yeah.
That's why I was saying with the venison, is it might be better off with what's cultivated, unfortunately, yeah. It might be cultivated, you know, like in a clean spot, and they're.
I mean, I usually buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might be. It could very well be cultivated in a clean place. I mean, Yeah, unfortunately, you know, if you don't buy organic, you're getting intent the same, pretty much the same garbage being put on purpose. But you probably buy organic. Unfortunately, if you buy California USDA organic, you know they could have that could have like sewage in it and still organic. I mean, it's
biosolids.
Oh yeah, is that what they call it? Yeah, it's sad. You know, you can't trust the label. Yeah. You know. So, you have any more confessions to make? any other questions? Yes.
Just yesterday, I came upon a trove of usnea, I believe it's called.
Uh huh.
I was picking firewood out of a city.
I'll tell you in a minute.
And someone had dumped a tree that was full of it, and so I picked it. And I wonder if you had any recommendations. Actually brought it to show it. I couldn't believe how much these branches had.
Yeah, and I brought stuff too. Let me not forget. So usnea, shall I spell that for you? U-S-N-E-A. That is a genus of lichen, and we're about to see. So break that out. This is in my top 100 list that we find because it's common.
Feel free to pass it around.
And look at his bag.
I can't believe. Yeah. You don't know.
Can I show him? Look at this.
Let me get it. That's so common. That's edible.
No, it's medicinal.
That's good.
Mm. Tastes like rubber bands. So can you pass around some of it? And this is the abundance of nature, okay? Now, you could go to the store right now and buy echinacea tincture. And what do you pay for 1 ounce tincture nowadays? I don't know, 10 bucks or something? Yeah. You could make probably 2 gallons with this, just as good, for free. Well, unless if you make your own alcohol, you know. Usnea, it's an antimicrobial, like echinacea, so it's good immune stimulant. Yeah, that's great. So, you know, there's your food and your medicine, right? Medicinal benefit. And
somebody said you could cook that, or would you not? Or make tea? Basic?
Is that normally how you...
If you like rubber band tea, you mean the extract, right? Okay.
Something
out of it. Yeah, I believe, and I'm not an herbalist, that the alcohol is the traditional, you know, or the recommended... solvent for the constituents.
You get more bang for your buck than you do in alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not always true, okay? You know, mushrooms don't need alcohol for their main constituent, which is polysaccharides, okay? But if you need the terpenes or something, then you need alcohol, and it depends what conditions you're trying to treat. If you want to just have a general medicine, you might do both, water and alcohol. Okay, but you'll get by just fine without alcohol. You don't have to do anything fancy for prevention. And vinegar is a great one. And vinegar is easy to make. So here's something else I want to show you that I brought plenty of. This is one of a number of baskets of it, and I gave Antana some that I still have from last year. So I went out yesterday and gathered these. Do they look like anything?
Spare peas.
Carrot. Yeah, we're getting closer. This is related to, they're all legumes. So yeah, they're like green beans, and that's the seed in there. And this one is related to carob, and in fact, there's enough for everybody to have one, and more than one. I mean, if you like this, we're about to taste it. I hope, huh?
He's going to tell us.
I'll tell you in a minute. As soon as everybody has one, we're going to taste it. Did y'all sign the waiver over here?
Yeah.
This is honey locust. Okay, honey locust. Locust is a thorny tree. And unlike black locust, it makes these big pods that are related to carob and to tamarind. And around here, maybe people aren't very familiar with it, and they, you know, it's not that common, because the main animal that spread these was the woolly mammoth. So in the last 10,000 years, there have been fewer of these trees than there used to be.
I've seen two boats already.
Oh, great.
Little tiny ones.
All right.
Is it part of the tamarind?
You'll find out in a second. For those of you who trust me, we're going to count to three and we're all going to take a bite. Now, so if you rub off the lice and then I'm going to warn you, this did touch the ground. All right, I've not washed them. But what you're going to do is you're going to take a bite of the fat end, the fat cushy end, not the seed end. Okay? Like this here. Okay, are you ready? One, two, three.
Wow. These are obviously a bit more fresh than last year's.
Yeah.
Dry out.
This will keep for a year, just like that. What do you think?
Honey locust.
Honey locust. Okay, so astringent.
That's good.
It's pretty tart, huh? Very, and sweet. So that's the honey part of it. And sometimes you get it and it's not quite as acidic. That's right, with the long thorns. So honey locust. And there are trees all around town with honey locust. There's one on Broadway, if you're interested. There's actually a map of every single honey locust tree in town. It's on a website called Falling Fruit. That website has every fruit tree that's, it's actually a world map of all the edible foods that people have submitted. And the city of Asheville apparently submitted a database of all the fruit trees that they know of that have been planted here. So,
did you say falling fruit?
Fallingfruit.org. There's a link to that from our website, notastelikehome.org. Now, normally you don't swallow, you can, the outside. So, the outside is not the most palatable thing. It's a tough skin. So, what would you do if you have a basket full of this and you want to enjoy this, besides, you know, just having this hard skin on it? Someone asked, what do you do with it?
I would take a knife out of the tip and then push out everything.
I haven't tried, well, I tried that once. It didn't work too well. Anyone else?
I'm just guessing, maybe pulverize it and boil it and then strain it.
I haven't tried that either. What's a quinoa?
It's like
that quinoa?
No, it's not. It's just like a strainer. But if you put a ladle through it, you can really extract all the liquid from it. Like if you blend it up.
Yeah. Right. Well, I've sort of done that. I mean, I've chopped it up into like half-inch pieces, one-inch pieces, and soaked it in a little bit of warm water, and then mushed it around, and this stuff just dissolved out, and then I just squeezed it. And I ended up with like a puree that came out of this, okay? And then you could concentrate that down. I haven't done it. I mean, I kept it raw. I don't know, because I just think raw is probably healthier. And I've never done more than that. That's it, that's all I've done. If you want more of this, help yourself. When you leave, you can take, as much of this as you want, unless you need to fight someone else for it. There's your prize. And do you need to go?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you came.
Yeah.
Thanks. You don't have to do that. That was... we're laughing because that money was a prop I was going to use to do a demonstration. It's not actually donations.
Well, it's a good place to put a little bit.
Okay. Well, thanks. We'll go to good use. We teach kids with it. Now, before anyone else needs to go, though, we're gonna let Antanas tell you what he brought, and we're gonna feed you some more wild food. Does that sound good?
Yeah.